Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, it is a podcast that would have been real hard for us to predict doing. I thought you did as a very standard, solid job of the instant reaction podcast, looking back at Florida State's loss to UNC on Saturday. So we'll vary it up a little bit. Thought you touched on a lot of solid things there. And in an effort not to be repetitive, going to go ahead and open up this podcast to listener questions. Have to let the audience know that we received well over 100 of these things. We're not going to be able to hit every one. I'm going to try to blend some together, merge questions for efficiency's sake. But we are not short on requested pieces of conversation, Bud. So let's go ahead and get into it and have a conversation that maybe a little uncomfortable at times, but is very well warranted at a current record of 3-2.
Well, Inger, before we turn up the heat and answer questions number 1 through 175, which is why hasn't Florida State fired Charles Kelly yet, let's go ahead and devote some time to another heat, our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce, maker of the best hot sauce in the world. Louisiana Hot Sauce, one drop will do you.
Absolutely. Only fair to have a conversation about Louisiana, authentically hot take, and we'll do our best to be as honest and authentic in tonight's recap and analysis. But do want to remind people that it's brought to you by the fine product that comes from New Iberia there in Louisiana, and we are ever so fortunate to be able to pair with them, and would encourage people to continue to interact with us and them on social media. And we'll be bringing you some information down the line about some of their other product and a little bit more variety of products that they offer. But Bud, let's go ahead, get into the questions. We'll just kind of go back and forth, have a fairly loose, casual conversation here, but it will continue to center around all of the inquiries and questions that we received throughout the day.
Ingram, absolutely. By the way, did you happen to see where we ranked in the podcast rankings this week on iTunes?
No, and this is not me playing radio either. I'm unaware of it.
The number one college podcast, number one team recruiting podcast, and I guess that's what will happen when you do in excess of 10,000 downloads in the first 24 hours after a loss. So pretty solid there, and a lot of people were really mad about that game, and they wanted something to listen to very quickly. So that was those were good numbers, and we got a lot of positive reviews and ratings in the rating section there. Of course, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, or however you get your podcast. We are probably on there. Make sure to give us a review, and hey, if you enjoy this product, also give us a share on social media. I know a lot of folks have friends. Friends are good. Null friends are better, so share it with some null friends. Maybe they listen to it as well, and have them give us a rating too, so we can stay on top and continue to get these quality advertisers like we have. So without further delay, let's get into Jimbo Fisher's press conference today. We're not going to do like some podcasts and play you his entire audio and just mail it in, because that's, you know, that's not us. Ingram, I have to say, I didn't expect to get a lot out of today's press conference after hearing Jimbo Fisher be very defensive and go with a lot of coach speak when Jeff Cameron interviewed him on Monday morning. But I really found him very defensive, and I'm not sure if he knows what needs to be done or if he thinks anything can be done this year. How did you come away from the press conference today?
Yeah, honestly, it wasn't maybe quite as cringeworthy as what I thought I might have seen when just a quick review of social media. But I was a little surprised, a little bit taken back by, seems to be, has some of the nervous energy from his first couple of years seem to have returned. It's not worth saying things to the media like you won't write this because you don't understand it, and talking to people about like they don't understand what it means to run the quarterback. Yeah, they do. It's why we've talked about it ad nauseum. It's why you've written about it for a significant period of time. People understand the fundamental change of the mathematics of football when you run the quarterback. You don't necessarily have to to talk down to people or have a kind of a condescending tone. So you don't want to get too inside football and start trying to judge the trajectory of your program based off a coach's performance in a press conference, but it certainly wasn't a confidence booster if that's what you're hoping to take from it.
And for those of you at home who didn't get to hear, I'll read you the quote that kind of surprised me today. And when he said this, I thought he was going to start talking about something really complicated that's really actually tough to understand. But instead, he didn't. Mm-hmm. He talked about something that was really simple, and everybody can understand it, even if you are very rudimentary understanding of football. It's just counting to 11. Quote, "You got quarterback runs, which puts you up a guy, if you understand what I mean by that. Do you guys really understand what I mean by how a quarterback run changes?" And then he steps out from the podium. I mean, you won't write this because you don't care, but laughing. You want to hear a different story. When I give you the real stuff, you don't want to hear it. You don't listen because you don't understand it. But anyway. Like, how condescending is that? Are you kidding me? Dude, just explain it. Don't give me 6 sentences of a preamble talking down to me. I get it. I guarantee you. You know, Tomahawk does not 100 million page views, but we're not that far off annually. That's a whole lot of readers, and they get it. I think he really underestimates the media and his fan base as far as what they can understand on a simple concept of how running the quarterback adds an extra blocker because you don't have the quarterback standing back there after handing off doing nothing.
Yep, in complete agreement with you, and just not a good look when you're a double digit dog at home and lose to come out and start talking down to people about general knowledge of football. So don't want to make too much out of that, and I don't want to make too much out of this either, Bud. But I don't want to leave this conversation without commenting on his answer to Jeff Cameron. I know you kind of briefly referenced this, but Cameron asked him a good question, asked him a legitimate question. Probably misstated when he said fourth and one when it was fourth and two, but it's still a legitimate question to have Jimbo Fisher stretch that out into fourth and three and a half, fourth and four, as he kind of ended the question. That's not telling the truth.
It showed a willingness to lie. Ingram, we don't have to dodge this. Jimbo Fisher was willing to lie in order to avoid answering a question.
We can say the word lie. That's more disturbing than a press conference that had some pretty bizarre moments in it. That answer caught me off guard, and it's not necessary. I mean, Jeff, look, if you understand the dynamics of media and media availability made to radio personalities and stuff like that, it's not Jeff's job to sit there and hammer him. He's got access to Fisher. He did a good job in asking the question. But that's not a particularly tough environment either if you're Jimbo. You know, you can just state your question. Excuse me, you can state your answer to said question and move on. The fact that you felt the need to lie to avoid a question about that is, like I said, is more troubling than maybe a condescending answer to a press conference question.
100%. And it set the tone for the day because that interview always comes out at you know, like 8 o'clock in the morning and all the media can hear. It's only like 5 minutes or 8 minutes, but everybody can hear it. And yeah, you realized, okay, it's going to be like this today. Interesting. And that press conference went really long, and at times it was like pulling teeth. So let's get into some of these questions.
Let's do. Bud, I'll take us from this top here. Pierre asks, is this defense really worse than the unit that we saw in 2009?
That's a good question from Dr. Pierre, one of our loyal listeners. And the answer here is no, it's not. Now, our David DeVister of Tomahawk Nation, who has been one of the guys asking Fisher the toughest questions, actually at all the press conferences and the media availabilities, he wrote an article and said, look, this is the worst defensive start that Florida State has ever had. And that's true, statistically. But at the same time, I went today and I asked Bill Connolly, who's SB Nation's advanced stats guru and one of the leading minds in the field of football analytics. I said, Bill, is there a way that we can quantify just how good the offenses that Florida State has faced so far compared to, you know, let's say some other ACC teams and maybe Florida and Miami? And Bill being Bill, he sent me a spreadsheet with, almost 1,000 cells filled out. And I didn't need to go very far. I looked at cell number one. The number one set of offenses faced in the country, Ingram, the gap between number one and number two is bigger than the gap between number two and number 18. That's a full standard deviation greater between number one and number two. So whoever this number one team is of tough offenses faced, it's played a ridiculous schedule that would really warp any results. Do you know who that team is?
Florida State University.
It's Florida State. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty incredible. And that includes the FCS team. This is not some wonky formula that doesn't include Charleston Southern. That result is with the FCS team weighing it down. I believe three top 10 offenses plus a top 15 offense so far faced by Florida State. There's a lot of teams that will not face that in an entire season. Florida State faced that in September. That has to put some of this in context. Now, let's compare this to a defense maybe a couple hours south in Gainesville. Do you know where Florida ranks on this list?
I do not.
109th. When your Florida fans say, hey, look at our defense, look at Florida State's defense, there's no doubt. I think Florida's a better defense than Florida State's. It is more assignment sound. It plays with more aggression. I think it's more physical. It's also stayed healthier this year, certainly. But it's not as much better as Florida fans think it is, certainly. And Florida would have given up a boatload of points just as FSU did if it had faced the schedule that Florida State faced. Hell, Tennessee put, what, 30, 35 on them, 34? That's the only decent team Florida's played on offense. And it's not like Tennessee's offense is all that great. Miami, Ingram, is even worse. You want to guess where Miami is?
130s?
119th.
Okay.
So, to answer the question here, and this is not to say Florida State's defense isn't bad, because it is. But is it worse than the 2009 defense, which is kind of the benchmark for, you know, worst defense in my lifetime since 85? No, it's not. It's a lot better than the 2009 defense. I think that, I mean, North Carolina, if it had faced that 2009 defense, would have put up 60. And I think Ole Miss does too, legitimately. Like, I really don't think they would have ever punted or turned the ball over. But the flip side to this, and I'm writing about this on Tomahawk Nation on Tuesday, assuming I can find the time, is that in playing all these super elite offenses, and Trubisky for UNC is yet another elite quarterback Florida State has faced. You know, 13 touchdowns, no interceptions on the year, almost 80% completions. Legitimate Heisman contender if North Carolina ends up losing, you know, two or fewer ballgames. The part of this, though, is that playing this many elite offenses, those teams don't miss. So they every time you make a dumb error, they expose it, right? If you'd play, let's say, an average or even a decent or above average schedule of offenses, this defense would look a lot better right now because there'd be some teams just by their own lack of dominance wouldn't have exposed every single error Florida State makes. I mean, it seems like this year, almost every time Florida State makes a bust or play something with bad leverage or bad technique, they get popped for 30 or 40 yards on it.
You get punished, yeah. Yes. For the most part, there's a couple of errors in this game where you don't, but yeah, you do.
I mean, I think we can agree that, and absolutely. But I think that Florida State's opponents have punished him at a much higher rate than anybody else's have.
Absolutely.
You know, you see other teams on this list. Oklahoma wants to fire a defensive coordinator. Texas, its head coach is a defensive head coach. Today he took over play calling duties. BYU just gave up, I think, close to 50 to Toledo at home. You know, UCLA has faced a murderer's row. Pitt has faced a murderer's row. This is a list of defenses that have been ravaged so far this season, and part of it is due to the offense. So I do want to put that out there. I think this is important. Like, you can hold competing opinions that are both true. Like, Florida State is faced by far the toughest set of offenses in the country, and it's about to get harder this weekend because you've got to face Brad Kaya, you know, four NFL quarterbacks in the first six games, plus Quentin Flowers. It's about to get harder. But you can also hold the opinion that this defense has been bad, independent of the opponent, right? Lack of effort, lack of toughness, lack of physicality, lack of being assignment sound. Those things can both be true. Some people think that Florida State's defense is one of the 20 worst in the nation. And I can tell you just flat out, it's not. There's no way. not even close. But yet, it's also not one of the better ones in the country, and that's a big problem when you have the type of athleticism that Florida State has.
I think it's an interesting conversation, Bud, and it's one that's worth having. And historically, I think it's one that we've done a good job of having because it's not just a singular argument, and you're not trying to make that at all. This is not necessarily in defense of the defense, but it does give you perspective as far as what they faced. And it doesn't mean that we can have this conversation and we don't think that ultimately you have to make changes, that you don't hold accountability or you don't hold people accountable for what is a really hard to explain performance from a unit that's as talented as it is, even with some of the injuries it sustained. But you do also have to view that through the prism of the competition that you've encountered so far.
So maybe we can reverse this. And this was not a question that was asked. And I know we're taking a long time on this first question, but I think perspective is important before we answer the next question. What would a good defense, let's say a top 25 type defense, have looked like against Florida State's schedule so far? How many fewer points would it have allowed? Does it allow maybe a touchdown less against UNC? Maybe 10 points less, you think? Potentially, maybe.
I don't think I wouldn't want to get too much further north than a touchdown, but yeah, it's
so maybe they shave the touchdown off so that, you know, Florida State probably wins that game if you have that, but North Carolina is still probably scoring 30, right? Or 28, 30, you know, 31-ish, fair.
Very.
Against Louisville, I think you're still allowing 45-plus on the road after seeing what Louisville did to Clemson, arguably one of the best three defenses in the country in Death Valley at night. A good defense is still going to give up 45 to Louisville. You're still going to lose that game even if you have good defense because your offense was trash too. Against Ole Miss put 45 on Georgia. They put, 43, I think, on Alabama. They just put 48 up on Memphis, a very good Memphis team. Maybe you allow a touchdown less. That those points add up. But this idea that if FSU was playing good defense, it'd be holding these teams in the teens and 20s, I don't think that's accurate. That is part of the way that we can illustrate the quality of opponent faced by FSU so far.
I agree. It's worth reminding people the level of opponent. And it's also worth examining just how bad the defense has been and how frustrating it is to know that when that unit takes the field, more times than not, they're going to have multiple plays where they give up large swaths of yardage simply for not having a understanding as to what they're doing as a collective unit. I mean, you can basically bank on Florida State's defense giving up two plays a drive that the opposing team will pick up anywhere from 12 to 25 yards of play simply because somebody's not covered. Somebody got confused when they saw, you know, a stacked wide receiver formation or any of the other things that have given this defense so many troubles as far as just fundamental understanding of responsibility. So, they've made them pay for the mistakes they've made, but this unit has also been by far its own worst enemy and just not making anybody earn anything against it.
Right, which is the worst way to waste your athleticism because if you're nowhere near the play, your athleticism and your length really doesn't matter. Let's go to the next question because we did about 15 minutes on this and we have like 50 questions. And so,
looking at about a 17-hour podcast.
Yeah, this is not the NPR pledge drive, so we're not going to be doing that. This is from Kelly. Kelly asks, why did Fisher bring back Kelly? This is kind of ironic, by the way, Kelly asking about Kelly. Why did Fisher bring back Kelly after an awful 2015?
2015 wasn't awful. I mean, even with opponent-adjusted stats, I mean, 2015 was a pretty good defense. I don't think you necessarily are being homerish to say that. In honesty, the unit carried this team quite frequently, and that's something that we talked about coming in last year. But I don't think it's fair to label 2015's unit as awful.
So, and let's think about this logically, right? Florida State can have a bad defense this year And we can acknowledge it's a bad defense without having to say that it was bad in 2015. If Florida State, because Florida State had a bad defense in 2014, right? A lot of that did have to do with guys checking out, no doubt. But do you honestly think Auburn would be trying to pay Charles Kelly $1 million a year for 3 years guaranteed, which was the rumored offer, if he had produced back-to-back bad defenses in Tallahassee? Really? Come on. Do you think Jimbo Fisher would have pushed to get him this big raise and this guaranteed deal if he had shown in back-to-back years that he couldn't coach the defense? No. Some of these coaches might be flawed, and certainly think you can argue that. I don't think you can argue that they're totally irrational actors, right? And I don't want to get in the habit of doing that. They might be stubborn. They might be biased in some ways. But the reason why Jimbo Fisher argued and lobbied to get Kelly this extension so that he would stay is because he did produce a really good defense in 2015. Yes, they didn't face the best group of quarterbacks. Guess what? Neither did the 2013 team. Did 2013 face any quarterbacks who are now in the NFL?
Good question. Not one that immediately comes to mind. No.
I don't think so, right? So 2013 faced probably a worse slate of offenses overall than the 2015 defense did. And guess what? We have opponent-adjusted numbers who are able to say, hey, let's provide some context to these raw stats. And even on the opponent-adjusted numbers, Florida State was a really good defense in 2015. That's why Kelly got the contract extension. That's why Jimbo lobbied for it. I don't know why people need to claim that this defense has been bad for 3 years. It simply has not. Now, it is bad this year. So let's get to the next question from Angel or Angel. Why not fire Kelly right now? Notre Dame did it. Texas did it.
You got to promote your linebackers coach, bud?
The coach of the probably only unit on the team that has been worse than the secondary?
Didn't think so. Okay. We can sit here and honestly look each other in the proverbial eye, being that this is a conversation, but we both know that Lulling or Haggins is not going to be the defense coordinator, correct?
Because they have no experience calling coverages. This is not—
Never done it.
Right. And this is why you don't see defensive linemen become coordinators very often. It's because of the lack of knowledge of the run fits and of the coverages. The coverages are a lot more complicated than the fronts. Now, Notre Dame did it. Yes. Notre Dame's defense was also a lot worse than Florida State's. Notre Dame lost at home to Duke because of its defense. Notre Dame gave up, what, 50-something to Texas? And hell, they gave up a boatload of— they gave up, what did they give up, 40 to Michigan State at home? A Michigan State team that can't score against anybody else? Notre Dame's defense is a lot worse than Florida State's is. And you got to remember, too, that Brian Van Gorder kind of entered this year on the hot seat, whereas Charles Kelly did not. Charles Kelly just got a big extension in the offseason. The reason why Texas did it is because Texas' head coach is literally on the hot seat. And the reason why he got the job, in large part, was because of his defensive prowess. So he has the ability to take over the defensive play calling, which he did today. Charlie Strong did.
It's not fair to have Texas in this comparison. Like if Jimbo Fisher could fall back on his, if he was going to theoretically fire Randy Sanders right now. Well, sure. Yeah, he can.
Exactly.
Because he can be the offensive coordinator because he is an offensive coordinator.
That's his specialty. Nobody wants Jimbo Fisher calling this defense. All right. And I mean, not to mention he's already a micromanager and that would be just a little bit too much. But he also has never done it. So probably a further complicating factor. Speaking of complicating things, Ingram, I believe our next question kind of hits on that.
Absolutely. Barry asks, can't FSU simplify its scheme anymore? I guess that should read, can FSU simplify its scheme anymore?
I probably need to screen these questions a little better, but appreciate the question as well. And it's Twitter and not everybody, it's not required to use great grammar. You can always hit us up on Twitter at Nolcast, and you can also email us at nolcast@gmail.com. So
I realize what he's saying there, posing the question, can't. My personal answer to that is I'm not sure they can. I think they have simplified this about as much as they can, which is disturbing for its own reasons. But I don't know that the answers are going to be found in a more elementary form of this defense.
I totally agree at this point. I mean, earlier in the year, I do believe they were trying to do much. We had players' parents telling us that they tried to install too much and they were going too fast, and that when they tried to make, you know, kind of, hey, let's change this to this, let's change this to this on the fly, that it was troubling because the some of the kids didn't have the basics down. However, now they are running a lot of very base stuff. And this is on the coaches to get players to buy in, because I do believe that there's a crisis of confidence, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where I don't know that the players are trusting these defensive coaches. I think they love them. I think that Charles Kelly is a beloved figure by these players as far as liking him as a person. There's no doubt about that. But it's very clear that the lack of communication, the lack of buy-in, the lack of effort are major issues right now. And I don't believe that the scheme is too complex at this point.
Completely agree. Yeah, it's at this point, the defense is you've streamlined it as much as you can. It's incumbent upon people to understand what's being asked of them. And if they're not going to do it, and to an extent, I think this is tied in with effort as well, we can circle back to it, you've got to make personnel changes. So I don't think the answer is going to be found in greater simplicity. With that, we'll move to the next one. Bud, Matt asks, do you think the problem with the defense is the actual scheme, or do you think these guys have just tuned Kelly out and quit?
I don't think it's the scheme. I think that they have, I think some players have tuned out this defensive staff and freelance way too much. And we can certainly criticize players for that, but you can't really get all new players. In the offseason, you can get new coaches. So in the meantime, you may need to shuffle some players. You need to make sure that they're really understanding. I thought it was interesting today that Jimbo Fisher said, you know, we need to make sure that they're understanding. Like, we know we're telling them the right things. We need them to repeat it back to us. We need to make sure that they really understand it, which I'm kind of thinking, why would you not do that already? Or maybe they need to do it more. I'm sure they do it already. You know, it was kind of a question that I thought in my head. I was like, well, of course they do that, but apparently not well enough. I hope they haven't quit. It's going to be really disappointing to watch the rest of the season play out. In some ways, I think having Miami on deck is a reason for them not to quit, because some of these guys are from South Florida and they don't want to go down there and get punked. And if I'm Florida State staff, I'm saying, look, we've tried it your way, all this freelancing, all this sort of playing when you want to play, taking plays off, not paying attention to detail. You want to go get embarrassed in front of your boys in your hometown? Okay. Keep doing what you've been doing. I think that's your play if you're the FSU staff, right? And then you really sit everybody down, combine with that, and you say, what are we not understanding? What do we need to scrap? You know, what are you comfortable with? What are you not comfortable with? Mm-hmm. Some combination of that, I do believe, can produce some defensive improvement with the current players. I don't think they've totally quit, but I think some have probably checked out mentally.
I agree with you. I'm not sure they quit. I know there's a lot of little things that you can look at on social media right now and look at particular plays where guys are lacking effort severely. But I'll remind people, you know, I mean, it's not as though the defense came out in this game and just absolutely wet the bed. It's, you know, you're 10 minutes into the first quarter, 7-0, and the defense gets you a fourth down stop, hands the ball back to the offense again. This was not some horrible performance right out of the gate. Gave you a lot of at-bats in the first half, the first quarter, and the offense just wasn't able to make anything of it. Now, look, the defense is the reason you lost this game. When you give up, when you score 35, you should win the game more times than not. But do want to keep some idea of perspective and kind of how the game flow went. And defense gave the offense a couple of nice chances in the first half, and nothing came of it, first quarter in particular.
That's exactly right. I mean, and if you're Jimbo Fisher, you really need to, I don't know. In looking at this, when the opponent, if you use the Vegas odds, right, you can figure out what the opponent's expected to score. For instance, the over-under on this game was, I think, 71, and Florida State was favored by 11. So Ergo, the expected score was 41-30, right? Mm-hmm. 41-30, spread of 11, combined score 71. There's your deal. You know what Jimbo Fisher's win-loss record is when the opponent is expected to score 30 or more?
I do not.
It's 2-5, which leads me to believe that sometimes Jimbo calls the game like he still has Nick Saban's defense, regardless of whether he actually does still have Nick Saban's defense. And this year, I think we can agree that he does not have Nick Saban's defense. So maybe you need to adjust how you call the game and you don't try to kick field goals there. I know we have a lot of questions about that later on, so I'm not going to harp on that now. But your point is absolutely correct. The defense did get them the ball sometimes, and they did squat. They had the ball five times on North Carolina's side of the field and got 7 total points. That is horrific. And you can't get in a big hole if your offense is scoring. Part of the way you get into the hole is that you don't do jack on offense in the first half. And it happened against Ole Miss, and it happened against Louisville. We overlook it a little bit because the offense came out in the second half of those games and played very well, with the exception of Louisville. It was still pretty terrible. All right, Dr. Pierre again. What difference would a healthy Derwin James and Josh Sweat have had on our record at this point?
I mean, look, if you have Derwin, maybe he wins you this game. But that's not the problems that we talk about with this defense were evident when you had Derwin James playing. He is not some type of panacea. He's a dynamic player. He's one of the better players in the game. I think we're starting to get a decent idea as to how much Jalen meant to last year's unit. So, look, when you have these major game-changing pieces, I don't want to sit here and discount them, but the issues of this defense would not have been cured by the presence of one guy. And Sweat this year has maybe been limited by injury, but he didn't exactly blow me away in what we saw prior injury either. So it's hard for me to think that that he's going to mean too much as far as the total win-loss column.
I agree with you. I think Derwin James, if you have him, you win the North Carolina game. And that's just based on how many individual plays, one-on-one stops that he made against Ole Miss. I mean, he had, 5 or 6 tackles, and how many of those were solos. He had the interception. Josh Sweat needs to play hard consistently before I can count him as someone who will have a serious impact on the win-loss record, because everybody wants to focus on Matt Thomas loafing because he got caught in that one video, mm-hmm. Right. Which is true. He was loafing, and he has a couple other loafs, I think. But if you ask people who are on this team who get to see the grades that are given out, you know who's consistently the highest on the loaf?
Yeah, it's not. It's Josh Sweat. We've talked about this before. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not sure it's close. All right. Justin asks, based on the current state of linebacker play, do you think it's realistic that we see more of Dontavius Jackson, Rice, or Josh Brown?
Yeah, I'll reference the play that I just made a point ago about the defense to stop the linebacker who is mainly responsible for that, or at least the linebacker who fills and forces that stop is Dontavius Jackson, and I think that's somebody that you should expect to see more of moving forward.
I would agree with you there for sure. I don't know that you want to completely give up on Matthew Thomas, because athletically he's still one of your true freaks. But maybe sitting him some will make him play with more consistent effort and more consistent attention to detail. Who knows? All right, Greg asks, is the FSU-Bama-Georgia scheme bad against Ole Miss-Clemson style? That's an interesting question, man.
I take it he's asking about pattern match versus RPO, basically. I mean, I don't want to boil it down too.
I'm guessing so. I mean, it's spread option, up-tempo type stuff where the mm-hmm. quarterback's like a true threat to run. First of all, Ole Miss and Clemson do not run the same thing. Those are definitely different offenses. They're different schools of offense. I don't know. I need to think about this. I need to talk to people about this. I'm going to table this one. That's an interesting question.
It's a good question, Greg. Yeah, it is.
And pattern match is also a lot of teams pattern match in different ways. Like the Saban school is not the only school that pattern matches. Everybody teaches it differently, but all right, True Noel asks, fans are calling for Kelly's head, but would it make more sense to let go of Bill Miller, whose linebackers have seemed lost?
Yeah, I think Bill, I mean, look, I think it's almost a certainty at this point that Charles Kelly will lose his job. It's tough to see any situation that you can really bring him back even if you don't think he's fully responsible for this effort. I think Miller's fate is probably even more sealed than Kelly's, to be honest. It's maybe not appropriate for me to say that. That's certainly a little bit of just reading between the lines, but that has been a level of performance that's hard to even have a realistic conversation as to how poor the linebackers have been this year. It's been below anything we could have ever projected.
It doesn't matter if the players like the coaches if they don't actually play hard for them, right? I think there's a scenario out there where Charles Kelly is not actually fired, but maybe there's some sort of co-coordinator arrangement where you see Kelly going back to coaching linebackers. Even in that scenario, you know who would not be coaching Bill linebackers? Bill Miller.
Mr. Bill Miller, yeah.
Yeah, and I like Miller. I think he's actually a better recruiter than some people think he is. I'm not trying to blast on the guy. It's just a simple assignment in production. His unit has stayed the most healthy out of all of them on defense and yet has played the worst. Period. That's the facts. Got to make changes. Juan asks, with Burns demonstrating how effective he can be, granted against lesser opponents, why do you think he's not getting more playing time?
I mean, Burns has gotten a pretty significant amount of playing time, in my opinion, certainly for anybody else in his class. It would have been more than we would have really projected, say, even 3 months ago and certainly 6 months ago. So he's certainly limited. He's a guy that can get washed pretty easily. He's a guy that's in there to just go after the quarterback more times than not. But I think if you're Burns or anybody around him, the amount of playing time he's gotten this year has been more than you would have thought coming into the season.
Yeah, I think that our answer remains the same as it was preseason too. He's not that big. You don't necessarily want him in there on first down against the run. I think you still probably have a better chance that Josh Sweat or Jacob Pugh are able to play the run with good effort than the fact that Burns just doesn't necessarily have the girth to anchor, right? You need that bulk, and he'll get it eventually. I think he'll continue to play more, though, and they try to get him in there on every single passing down, right? Like, he's quite frequently in there. Anytime they get, like, third and seven or more, they just haven't forced a whole lot of third and seven types.
Yeah, I'm not trying to belittle the question, but he's gotten a significant amount of playing time, in my opinion. I don't want to bog us down, Bud, but I do want to go back. And while we're kind of talking about perhaps true freshmen that are pass rushing specialists, Josh Brown, maybe somebody we would have projected to get more playing time than he has. What's your opinion as to why you haven't seen more of 51 so far?
I mean, I'm very surprised that we haven't seen more of him. Everybody on the staff who I trust and you know, who was honest with us last year and told us, hey, this team was not going to be very good last year, they were very high on Josh Brown. And after seeing him on the recruiting trail, I was very high on Josh Brown too. So I don't know what's going on there. I know he's been a really good player on special teams so far. So maybe they're trying to find his role, or I wish I had a better answer for the listeners.
Gotcha.
D.A. Clark, what defensive changes can be made this season? What is wrong with Marcus Lewis? Well, I think we talked about the defensive changes some, right? I think we could definitely see Florida State play more press coverage to be a little bit – use their length a little bit better and hopefully try to disrupt some routes. At least if you play more press, I also think it imparts a little bit more of an attitude of physicality to the defense, although you definitely risk giving up big plays if you try to press and miss. But – some more press coverage, I think, makes sense, especially if you're going to try and blitz more. What is wrong with Marcus Lewis? Marcus Lewis seems, so far, incapable of playing his assignment. There are times when this defense looks okay at 10 spots, and then I have no idea what Marcus Lewis is doing.
Yeah, yeah. The older I get, the less I am to really call out a kid, but there's a reason why 2 weeks ago I said I can't be sure of it, but when I watched Marcus Lewis play, he's involved in a whole hell of a lot of these blown assignments and seeming, you know, situations where you have two guys staring at each other. I would have started to seriously cut his playing time earlier just because of a lack of understanding. And to really, honestly, for me, that's an effort issue, particularly after the first or second week. If you don't know what you're doing, it's because you're not putting in the effort, putting in the time needed. which is something that maybe has been mentioned with some questions as to how much Lewis would be able to do that behind the scenes. So
this is a great point, right? Effort is not limited to game day.
Effort can also be,
you know,
absolutely
go into your lifting session that you're scheduled to go to. Actually lifting what's on your sheet, what's on your card, as opposed to just saying you did. Studying your playbook, taking your assignment test yourself. There's all kinds of things that require effort, and so far I agree with you. I don't think Lewis necessarily. It's hard for me to believe that he has put in that kind of effort given the amount of assignments he's blown. And let's be clear that the positions on this defense that are a real concern are the star position, the two linebacker spots, and then Nate Andrews, who's replacing Derwin James. Trey Marshall is not as bad as people think he is, I don't think. But those four spots, and they're all in the middle, are where this defense gets hit the most.
Mm-hmm. Real hard to hide weaknesses in the middle of your defense too. So.
Yeah, and they're clustered. That's the problem. Like if you had one weakness outside, one weakness inside, and one weakness maybe up front, okay. But when they're all clustered together, it's sort of a multiplier effect of suck.
Question, Chris asks. Excuse me, Rich asks. Why doesn't Florida State blitz more? Why are we so bad at timing its blitzes?
Well, I think this question kind of answers itself in some ways.
It may be
right?
Tied together, absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe it doesn't blitz more because it's not a good blitz team. Why isn't it a good blitz team? I would say coaching. I think that's something you have to rep and believe in and really work to get right. And you have to blitz as a team. I don't think this defense plays good team defense. And that means, you know, if you're a defensive lineman, you're not trying to get to the quarterback. Sometimes you're pulling a blocker out of the way to open a hole to have a backer shoot that gap and go after the quarterback. Or after the running back. If you're Tavarius McFadden, shouldn't you be playing 7 yards off and not 12 yards off on that one blitz down there when North Carolina scores its, I think, second to last touchdown of the day? Yes. So they don't blitz very well as a team. I think that's a coaching error, which is another, you know, sort of damning thing against this coaching staff. And the reason why they don't blitz is because they're not any good at it. Chris asks, who can FSU get as a defensive coordinator? I have no idea. I really did not expect to be formulating defensive coordinator hot boards in September. Maybe I should have. Don't think so, but I don't know. Chris, we'll probably do another episode on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have plenty of time to discuss that.
Charlie Strong, bud, went ahead and said it. There's your defensive coordinator next year.
I'm down with it. I don't know if Jimbo Fisher would be. He doesn't run that Saban system. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm not being serious, folks. I'm just throwing a name out
there. I'd legitimately be cool with it. I think Charlie Strong would probably be very happy to get out of the Big 12. He has experience coaching in Florida, recruiting in Florida, and much like Sal Cincere was, Texas would still be having to pay his buyout, so he could probably come for somewhat cheaper. And if you want to do that co-coordinator arrangement instead of throwing 3.2 at Kelly to buy him out, maybe you could pull that off. Not saying it's going to happen. Don't go running saying Bud said this, that it's going to happen. Just hypothetically, I can think of worse scenarios. I don't think Charlie Strong has completely forgotten how to coach defense. I do think he doesn't know how to do it in the Big 12, though. Why doesn't FSU jam?
I said I wouldn't be serious, I would like to see it personally. I just wasn't not necessarily projecting it or so. No rumors, nothing come across my desk suggesting that's in play.
Why doesn't FSU jam receivers? I think we already kind of answered this. I don't know why they don't try to do it more. I'm guessing because they're not as good at it as we had hoped they'd be.
They do some. McFadden jammed the hell out of some kids against USF. He did.
They need to start doing it more. I really believe that. Joe, is there a split in the locker room? This is a good question. Jimbo denied it, but Cook's comments, Yeah. Did you catch that in the press conference today? That was interesting. He kind of got testy with some reporters because Dalvin Cook made a comment that the offense did its job, right?
He got testy with reporters, and he was armed with facts. He was armed, like he knew. Yeah, I think Jimbo knew that one was coming, and I found his response to be pretty interesting. So
Yeah, I think he did a good job of trying to paint his picture, where he said, look, you have to read the quote in the full context about how we win as a team and lose as a team. Ingram, I'll ask you, do you think that there's a split between the offense and the defense?
I mean, look, anytime you have stuff like that in football, you're going to have frustration. You're going to have maybe kids snipe at each other in the locker room or something like that. But, I mean, is there some kind of large cultural divide? I don't think so. I think there's if you want to examine the culture of the program, I think it's more the conversation that we just talked about where effort isn't necessarily a thing that exists within the 48 hour or 48 minutes of actual gameplay on Saturdays. Effort is much more involved in that. I don't think Florida State has a infighting problem. I think it has probably more of a total buy-in problem.
I would agree with that. Also would agree. It was interesting today. Fisher said that he was pressed on it and they asked him, have you ever been part of a team that's had a split like that? And he said, no. Now, a lot of people took his answer to mean not as a head coach, which fair, fine. As a coach, though, he definitely has been. Because it was only, what, 8 seasons ago that 2009 happened? So, mm-hmm. Pretty sure that there was some infighting going on there, not only between players, but also between coaches. And Jimbo Fisher should remember this very much. So I'm guessing he meant that response as a head coach.
All right, bud. We tried to group some of these questions, have clusters, and also merge similar questions together. So before we move into the section that's more centered around Jimbo Fisher, let's go ahead and mention our friends at Madison Social. Second year that they've been with us, instrumental in us being able to build the product that we have and be able to bring you frequency or be able to bring you content with the frequency that we do. And Bud, I think it's been a while since we just absolutely gushed over one of their food offerings, and they've got something going with on Sundays or really just pancakes in general. I know it can help make a rough Sunday a little bit better, and that is these Nutella pancakes they have. That is that looks absolutely absurd.
Yeah, man. Like I like pancakes. I'm not necessarily a pancake freak, but these look ridiculous. It's a peanut butter pretzel pancake with Nutella and caramel sauce. That's amazing. Like, who thinks of that? Matt and the guys at Madison Social do, of course. That's, man, that's really cool. Like, I like having sponsors like Madison Social. It's a great place for food and drink. You know, it's that's a good example of how this is not just like standard greasy, you know, pub fare. It's a sports pub, but it's got actual like quality food and some creative dishes, and it's a place where you can go and get a great burger and wings. You can go and get a nice brunch. You can take a date there if you wanted to and get a little nicer meal. If you want a lighter option, they have plenty of those as well. Their salads are really good. I know I eat their salad over summer when I'm at the Jimbo Fisher camp because I don't want to eat something super heavy and then go stand on the field in the hot sun for the next 4 hours. It's great variety. It's great people. It's great location. It's Madison Social.
Bud, let's go ahead and get into these questions surrounding Jimbo Fisher, the first of which is a little bit of a merging of many questions, and that is centering around the topic of how this loss or these two losses so far in the 2016 season might impact Jimbo Fisher and his possibility of being a head coach elsewhere, but in particular the LSU job.
So I think even if Florida State's season continues to go downhill, that Jimbo Fisher would still be a strong candidate for the LSU job. Of course, he's denied interest, said he wants to stay a long time at Florida State, blah, 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 whatever. Not sure that I believe that, but that's what I would say, too, if I were him, even if I had every intention of leaving. What you have to look for here is Texas, and this is important, so I'm going to lay this out real quick. If Texas fires Charlie Strong, as Sports Illustrated reported it was likely to do at the end of the season today, which I don't know why Texas would do this. I not that I have a whole lot of like feelings for Charlie Strong. He's going to get his huge buyout. But maybe it's to appease boosters. Maybe it's to send kind of a signal to Tom Herman, perhaps, the Houston coach who's very highly coveted. if Texas fires Charlie Strong, you've got to think it's doing so because it believes it needs to make a move on Tom Herman now. And Tom Herman is a former coach at Texas, has recruited in the state of Texas for a long time. If that happens, that takes the person who most people believe to be number one in LSU's board off the board. Tom Herman, who would be number two on LSU's board. Assuming they don't actually keep Ed Orgeron, and look, LSU looked great last weekend after it fired its head coach, Les Miles. They actually set a record for LSU's yards in an SEC game. But assuming they don't keep Ed Orgeron, you have to think Jimbo Fisher is their number one choice, right? So I don't think the loss impacts the Jimbo Fisher to LSU legitimate talks very much. Does it impact how much LSU fans want to talk about it on social media or on radio waves? Sure, potentially.
I would say if Florida State loses on Saturday and loses against Clemson, I think Jimbo Fisher, the head coach of a 5-4 football team, becomes a little bit harder to roll out as your next head coach. Particularly if they say lose to Florida, at some point I do think that starts to mount. At the same time, no amount of losses undo the fact that you've got a guy who won 29 games in a row, who won a national championship. There's just not that many people with a resume like that. So I don't want to sound foolish, but I also think that if this season absolutely goes into the mountain, that it does it does start to be something that enters the narrative a little bit more.
I think that's fair. I guess I'm trying to think, like, what other candidates out there would really fit LSU that specifically, especially because they apparently want head coaching experience. But that's something we can discuss at a later date. Edgar Bashan asks, why didn't Fisher think he needed to score 40-plus to win?
That's a tough question to answer, Sean. I mean, I think when you made your prediction, you had, somewhere in the low 30s with UNC scoring 34.
Yeah, 42-34.
When I looked at, you know, when you asked me what the race was to, I think I said 35. Now, look, I'm not saying like we're geniuses by any means, but it was pretty evident that you were going to have to score points. And that's kind of where we mentioned where you really have to scratch your head in some of the decision making in the first quarter. The idea of to kick a field goal on the first drive is one that's really hard to come to grasp, to make any kind of sense of. And there's some other moments in that game that really makes you wonder if Fisher's willing to swallow the pill and come to the idea and the understanding that you're going to have to score and you're going to have to score frequently with this iteration of Florida State's team.
Can't keep giving up possessions. Can't keep wasting possessions like they've been doing. In fairness, we don't necessarily know that Fisher didn't think he needed to score 40-plus. We believe his actions indicate that he didn't think so. But he hasn't come out and said, I didn't think I needed 40. In fairness to Jimbo. Matt asks, recruiting-wise, has anyone done less with more than Jimbo? Thinking percentage of blue chippers and accounting for the JW5 bump. Yeah, I'm actually going to stick up for Jimbo here. Yes, a lot of people have done worse, and that's why they've been fired. Florida State has probably the fifth or sixth best roster in the country. In fact, there's a guy in Baton Rouge who just got fired for losing a lot more games than Jimbo Fisher has. Now, granted, against a tougher schedule over the last several years, this year, not a tougher schedule so far. Probably not a tougher schedule at all, actually, even when you look at the future games. This idea that Florida State has a Jameis Winston bump is not completely wrong, but at the same time, it's really insufficient to address the entire bump that was the amazing recruiting and recruiting luck at times that they had with their just astronomical and, as we've said many times on this show, unsustainable hit rate in recruiting. When people say that the Jameis Winston thing, it's just too simplistic. They had NFL starters at, what, every other position on that offense and defense? Or at least guys who are still on NFL rosters? That it was a team that Jimbo Fisher recruited. He didn't win that national championship with a player. He won that national championship with a dominant team, a team of stars, not just Jameis Winston. So yes, has Nick Saban achieved more? Yeah, but he also has a lot more talent. You know, has Urban Meyer achieved more? Yes, but we're talking about a very small handful of guys. I do not think that Jimbo Fisher is some massive underachiever. The guy has won a ton of games. He's won a national title. He's won several conference titles. He's won even more division titles. That's not the question we're asking. The question I think for a lot of our fans are asking here, does all that indicate that he's going to be able to get this thing back together? So next question here from Jeff. Can FSU do better than Jimbo Fisher?
Tough question. I'm not sure exactly what he's asking there, to be honest. Like, can you go out and hire somebody right now that's better than Jimbo Fisher? Nobody immediately comes to mind that's a legitimate candidate. No.
No. Do you think that the person that you hire is going to equal what Jimbo did over that 6-year run? Probably not. That's a really special run, even within the context of Florida State history. But this idea that nobody else could succeed at Florida State, I think, is an idea that Jimbo Fisher himself disproved when it was floated out there that nobody else other than Bobby Bowden could succeed at Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's fair to ask whether Jimbo Fisher's best work at Florida State is behind him. Modernizing the program, getting the boosters to understand the expectations and the needs of a modern program, getting the indoor facility built, another national title, another Heisman Trophy. All those things are the reasons why he deserves to have the opportunity to hire another defensive coordinator next year, assuming that he makes a move and doesn't retain Kelly as a full-time DC. But could they do better? Sure. Is it likely? Not necessarily, but you're not – this question assumes that the Jimbo Fisher you have now is the Jimbo Fisher that you have – that you've had over the last 5 or 6 years. And I don't know that it is.
Or the Jimbo Fisher who had the ability to have his message received over the past 5 or 6 years. Even if Jimbo Fisher is a constant in this, and we know that's not the case simply because it's not humanly possible. But let's just assume that Jimbo Fisher is a constant in this equation. There's more than ample evidence that points to a little bit of a point of diminishing returns that we've talked about. And others have as well. But at a point, particularly in college right now, the message that you have just stops being received frequently, not always, but frequently. And I think that's a legitimate thing to mention in this question is there somebody out there whose message and whose buy-in might be received a little bit more if in fact, just time has taken over and some of what Fisher may sell starts to ring a little bit stale in the locker room.
So let's put some math on this. If you say Jimbo Fisher is like a QB or a coach rating of 100, right? Which I don't think he is, but still he's pretty damn close career wise. Would you rather have 70% of that 100 rating received, or would you rather have like, I don't know, 100% of an 85 coach rating received? 100% of the 85, right?
Certainly.
I guess we'll have to see what happens with this. Ingram, we are about an hour in, and so I think what we're going to do here is actually split this, and we're going to release this episode on Tuesday, and when we come back, we'll release the second half of this show, which is going to be about 30 or 40 minutes, on Wednesday.
Sounds good. When you get north of 140 responses, it's tough to squeeze it into one show. This has been good, bud. Enjoyed our conversation so far and excited to carry on with part two. We love can make us hate ourselves. Russian roulette table. I got a bet safer. You got to know when to fold your cards when you ain't able to reach into that dash. When that jacker up and flash that brass light. Give me all you got of that's your ass. That's all that it was took. House got me shook, cause ain't no point spread, but God doing buff life. So be careful when you shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em up, shake 'em, shake 'em up, shake 'em up.